On this episode of The Wendy Edwards Show, Kelly Succi is on the line from California. She is a midlife adoptive mom, and she'll tell us about her experience with infertility and ultimately adoption. Also in the podcast, Allison Capps has successfully adopted from China. We're going to check in with her and see how things are going with their newly adopted daughter, Zoe. All of this plus the music of Willie D on The Wendy Edwards Show.
I'm like a train, my lord, I keep on chugging on. You're still not gone from my mind, but I haven't got the
time. I'm Sarah Blacker. I'm a singer-songwriter from Boston. And Wendy Edwards is all about paying it forward. She drives across the country to support art. She puts a message out into the world to be positive and to be honest. And use your brain to use your heart and to help others. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, your neural pathways will strengthen themselves because you will get smarter. You will learn about music. You'll learn about art. You'll learn about intelligent thought. And it will change your life so that you become a more positive thinker, too. Positive thought inspires positive event, inspires a positive life. So listen to Wendy, because she's a positive gal.
Tear you apart.
You're listening to Wendy's podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm talking to Kelly Succi, midlife adoptive mom and adoption coach. Kelly, you live out on the West Coast, correct?
I do. I'm in California in the San Francisco Bay Area.
The reason I called you is because you pay it forward through helping other parents with adoption, having gone through a midlife adoption yourself. Not a lot of people will understand what a midlife adoption is. Could you give us more of a definition?
I got married when I was 39, and my husband and I went through 6 unsuccessful IVF cycles. And then we found ourselves, I was 42, my husband was 39, and we got to the end of our fertility treatments. And the next step in our road to parenthood was adoption. We were starting this process in our 40s, and we really did not know a lot about adoption. We'd become well-versed in all things infertility, and so our adoption journey started while I was in my early 40s.
Let's go back to when you were doing fertility treatments, because part of my show is to connect. Part of having my show is being able to connect with people who are going through some struggles, who maybe don't realize there are options or maybe haven't really explored the options, even though they know them because of a variety of reasons. And you would know those reasons, whereas I've not been in your position. So let's start with infertility and tell me what you went through, please.
It was a difficult 3 years of life. When my husband and I got married, we had kind of been given the full green light to, you know, start a family. Everything looked great. And then 6 months into the process of trying to get pregnant, we did some additional tests, and we were quickly thrust into the high-tech world of infertility treatments. Creating a family became a very high-tech and impersonal process.
What was going on in your relationship at the time?
We were still newlyweds, and this was certainly an abrupt, you know, kind of bump in the road in that process. In the beginning, you know, we just had to take in this information and, you know, pull together to start the process of the infertility treatments together.
Now, a lot of people going through that find it stressful, and it can sometimes interrupt communication, but you were able to pull together?
We certainly had some difficult times through the 3 years that we did the in vitro cycles. Just imagine, you know, being in one of the most stressful situations that you can be, and then also add on to that a wife that is hopped up on lots and lots of synthetic hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good combination to
be sure.
No. So yeah, there were definitely, we have a very strong relationship. We've been married for 12 years, but that was definitely a very trying time for us.
Something that comes to mind is not only the frustration of being, as you say, hopped up on hormones, but having doubts of whether you're going to have a child must really hurt.
It was very difficult. I had actually been married earlier in my life, in my late 20s, and the reason that my first marriage dissolved was because somewhere after I do, and prior to celebrating our first wedding anniversary, my ex-husband decided he didn't want children. So this issue of having a child was something that I had already given a lot of soul searching to.
Mm-hmm.
So to then be now married to somebody that was committed to having a child with me, but then having the journey be so difficult, it was really, really a hard and sometimes dark time for both of us, and especially myself.
You're also playing this record in your head, going over and over, you know, weighing the doubt of whether you're going to have a child on your own. Was it difficult for you to transition from really, really wanting that to being able to adopt?
I think one of the difficult things about transitioning, and I talk about this a lot in my work with clients, the infertility process and treatments and the clinics, I mean, it's a really seductive process. It really is akin to me to going and playing the slot machines.
Okay.
There's a lot of statistics. They plug in, your age and any medical issues you might have coming into it, and they'll give you some, you know, statistic. You have a 50% chance of success, and I think you really get pulled into that, and it really colors how you proceed with, what you're going to do next. So during the time that we were actively pursuing pregnancy, I really was very much looking to have a child by being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we finished our fertility treatments, I was very much through being a science experiment, and I'd really had some time to do some soul searching and realize that it was more important to me that I become a mother than that I experience pregnancy.
Okay.
And that I had spent enough of my time trying to achieve motherhood through pregnancy and fertility treatments.
To be fair, some people going through that option has been a blessing and they consider it a good choice for them. But for you, it wasn't the case.
Doing the fertility treatments?
Right.
Well, it was, looking back, I really wish that I had stopped sooner, that mm-hmm. I hadn't put myself physically and emotionally through that process for as long as I did. And actually doing as many IVF cycles as we did, it put me at some increased risk for some certain cancers, and I now have to be monitored yearly to make sure that I don't develop these. So looking back, I wish that I had come to the awareness earlier.
When you change your mind from I'm going to get pregnant to I'm going to adopt a baby or a child, there has to be a process for that. I don't think it's something that you just snap one day, decide, okay, that's it, this is what I'm going to do. I would think that if you're very passionate about being a mother and getting pregnant, it would take some time to be able to consider that and find that a viable alternative.
Absolutely. And I also speak about that frequently. And I feel that it's really important to acknowledge that transition. I started letting go the last two IVF cycles because we used donor eggs. So at that point, I'd already let go of my biological ties. So I was starting to transition already emotionally as to having the biological tie to a child I would have in the future. But I think that it's really important for mothers to really acknowledge that shift and to take care of themselves as they, if they choose to, if they decide to adopt as a way of building their family. It's letting go of a dream. It's letting go of how they planned something to happen. Very powerful.
It can be. And I think it's also letting go of what is and feels normal.
Right. I agree. And what society might deem normal and the people surrounding them might feel normal. This is the adoption process is a whole new, journey. And it's got a lot of questions that sometimes make those that are in it and those around us uncomfortable.
Kelly Tsuchi is a midlife adoptive mom and an adoption coach, and she's teaching me what it feels like to transition from going through in vitro fertilization techniques and trying to have a baby on her own to finally coming to the conclusion that she can still be a mom through adoption. And we'll be back with Kelly to hear more about this option in just a moment on The Wendy Edwards Show. Ladies and gentlemen, Willie D.
In the morning, we heard the roosters cry. Light shined out on the mountains, train was rolling by. It started to rain and it got real cold. We were dreaming what it would be like to live in Mexico. Me and Bobby were sitting by an old Coke machine. He was telling the stories of the places that he's been traveling on this road. Everywhere seems the same. It's getting kind of old. Feeling bored. I've already seen this sight. Well, I'm standing here under your light. In the middle of the night, I can't see a thing. Can't figure out what is right. My eyes start to sting. Look up at the clouds, I can only see stars. Dream of living somewhere else, dream of living large. Traveling on this road, everywhere seems the same. It's getting kind of old. Feeling bored. I've already seen this sight. Well, I'm standing here under your light. I can't tell what's wrong with me. I can't tell where I am. Seems there's no place to be. Can you give me a hand? I need a lift. Can you hold me up? It feels like I'm going to slip. Can you heal my pain? Mirrors in every direction, starting to lose my mind. Necklaces and bracelets, cold chills running up my spine. Will you dance tonight by the fire? Will you dance tonight by the fire? Traveling on this road, everywhere seems the same. It's getting kind of old. Feeling bored. I've already seen this side. I'm standing here under your
musician from Batesville, Virginia. He started his career busking on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Willie D is with The Wave, and he also performs on his own. His jazz funk group played at the John Paul Jones Arena at a pre-party before the Dave Matthews Band in the spring of 2009. Batesville singer-songwriter performs regularly at local venues, but also has been heard in Guysborough, Nova Scotia, Salvador, Brazil, and as far away as Cape Town, South Africa. We'll hear more from Willie D coming up. You're listening to Wendy Edwards on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com. I'm Wendy, and I'm with Kelly Succi, who is a midlife adoptive mom and an adoption coach. And before the break, Kelly, you were talking about what it meant for you to come to terms with adopting a child rather than having one on your own. What happens when you come to that final decision?
Yeah, I think that it was not a light bulb moment. I think it was more of a process. And I had started thinking about it, you know, somewhere in the middle of the infertility process, that realizing that this might not manifest in the child that we had hoped. We had a pregnancy after our first in vitro cycle, and we lost that pregnancy at the end of the first trimester. And that was a sobering moment.
So how far along were you in your pregnancy when you lost that one?
10 weeks.
It doesn't really matter how far along you are, does it?
No, it doesn't, because the pregnancy was just at a point where the doctors tell you you can start to relax and be cautiously optimistic, and then 2 days later, my body, you know, miscarried the baby. So it was really, really a difficult time.
Were you cautiously optimistic at that point?
I was starting to be. I was starting to relax and starting to really start allowing myself to feel pregnant and not just that this was a science experiment.
And what happened to you when you lost the baby?
It was devastating. I felt like my body was betraying me, and you have no power to stop the process of it happening. And it was a very dark time. We had worked so hard and done everything right, and I just felt completely betrayed by my own body. Of course, it was not my body's fault, but it just felt like that.
Mm-hmm. See, this really touches me, because I know what it means to be a mom. I really wanted to have a child myself, and to lose your pregnancy and lose a child in your pregnancy, you know, that hasn't happened to me, but it still, like, chokes me up every time I hear about it from someone.
It was really hard, because I had always, like you, I had always wanted to be a mom. I babysat through my teens. My husband, for the last 14 years he's known me, he's always called me the little kid magnet, because we go out places and little children will peek over restaurant booths to say hello. and I love children, and they know that. Children are very perceptive, and they can sense that I do like children. I love children a lot. Mm-hmm. I volunteer at my daughter's school, and so it was a very dark time to not only lose the pregnancy, but lose a lot of the hope that this was going to manifest. And at that point, we didn't know what next. We didn't know what next we were going to do in our past. So,
where did this option come from?
The adoption option?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we sat down and we really looked at from where we had come, and we really realized that we were still both so deeply committed to wanting to be parents, and we felt we had really exhausted our options as far as conceiving a child. We had done everything we humanly possibly could, and we knew that it was definitely possible for us to adopt, and it felt like the right and next step for us.
Was adoption something that someone had brought up to you?
It was discussed with us by the fertility doctor that we were working with at the time, at the end of the last cycle that we did, and where we'd made it clear that we were done doing any more treatment.
So when you're done with treatment and you've sort of lost, and you've lost all that hope, and you're staring in the face of this doctor who, you know, you've given your body to for probably months, if not years, right?
Years.
They give you the term adoption. How does that feel?
Well, it's a little difficult. It was kind of hard to hear at the time, but it was given to us as to try to give us back some of that hope. Let us know that we could still be parents. It just wasn't going to necessarily happen the way that we planned, or how we planned, or, you know, in the time frame we planned. But it was given to us as, if you're still committed to having parents, there's other ways to do it.
How did you explore that?
We initially just went to an orientation meeting for a local adoption agency, and we just listened to hear what the process was like. And we took about 3 months just to kind of think about it and see how we felt about adoption.
When did you know that this option was the right one for you and your husband?
I think once that we started the process, and they do a series of visits with a social worker, and so we had a real opportunity to discuss how we felt emotionally about this new leg in the journey, and we became more and more comfortable with the idea of adoption as a way of family building.
I like that, family building. How old are typical adoptive moms?
Well, more and more, there's a growing population of mothers 40 years and older, that are adopting. I think that a lot of mothers-to-be, they want to exhaust all their options to, of fertility treatment before they look into adoption.
Right.
A lot of women are putting off motherhood, and they are establishing themselves in their careers and doing other things in their 30s before looking into motherhood.
So you've started a business as an adoption coach for other people who have chosen to have kids a little bit later in life.
That's right.
Are there many people looking for help from people like you?
Yes, there are. And one of the biggest challenges has been for me to let people know that I'm here. And yes, I started doing what I do as adoption coaching a little over 5 years ago, because during the process of trying to get pregnant and then adoption, I had made a commitment that I said, if I ever survive this process and become a mother, I want to help others get through the process, maybe a little less unscathed than I did. So once my daughter was a year old and sleeping through the night and I could put coherent sentences together again, I started interning with an adoption professional that we had worked with, learning everything that I needed to know about how to adopt in the United States.
And so did you have to go through schooling to become a coach?
No. I spent 2 years working as an intern for another adoption professional, and I also did a lot of research, and I did a lot of reading, and I continue to do so on a regular basis, because adoption laws change, and there are different adoption laws in every state. And I do work with people both remotely and people that are in my area that I can work with face-to-face.
And I believe it helps that you've gone through this process yourself, so you're familiar with the things that a lot of us wouldn't be.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the biggest value adds that I can give to couples that are going through the process that maybe some of the people even that we worked with during our adoption didn't have. I have very much the been there and done that experience, and I'm very professional in the pieces of this that require me to be professional, but I also become a very personal ally of theirs. I'm available to talk to pretty much all the time, either by email or telephone. I'm kind of the hand holder during this process, which is I found to be the missing link for me going through that process. It's a very emotional process, and it's very personal, and with adoption becoming more and more prevalent in the United States, more and more couples are on the waiting list to wait to be chosen by a birth mother. And so it's difficult to get that kind of personal attention from adoption professionals such as agencies and attorneys.
Describe a situation for us that you were able to show those strengths.
I can give a couple of examples. Recently, I was helping, one of the things that I do is I help put together what's called a Dear Birth Mother Letter, which is kind of a misnomer nowadays. It's actually a very high-tech, graphic-heavy profile that's put together, and it's what's given to potential birth mothers for them to select a couple to parent their child. And I was working with some clients, and there was some situations that were going to become available for them to be presented to, and we were trying to finish up their profile, and I ended up spending about 3 nights in a row up until about 10 o'clock at night at their house, sitting in front of their computer with them, finishing up the last-minute touches and working with them and pulling photos together and just making sure that this happened in time for them to be put into the waiting pool for a situation that was coming up.
When they were facing the computer with you and trying to come up with what to say and what pictures to use and things like that, were they nervous about what a potential birth parent would think of them?
Yes, and one of the things that I learned through our experience is is that you cannot predict what someone's going to be looking for in that letter. And the very best thing that potential adoptive parents can do is just to be yourselves, and the right match will come from that, not to try to morph yourself into what you think people are looking for. And so that was a big part of my value to this particular situation, that they were overthinking things sometimes, and I reminded them, I had gotten to know them quite well by this point, and I would bring them back to their strengths and qualities that would shine through.
What are some generic things that a lot of people put on their adoptive postings and profiles that you think are good to stay away from?
I think some of the same things that are good to stay away from, if you're on a dating website, just some of the cliche things that people like to do. They like walking on the beach, and people emphasize a lot about their homes and the size of their homes. A lot of couples focus too much on how things look and presenting and thinking they know what a birth mother might be looking for. So they're presenting a lot of things, materialistic things. And I have found through my experience, both as being shown, we were shown to a number of birth mothers before we were selected by our daughter's birth mother. Every birth mother has a different set of criteria, and that you just need to be consistently yourself and focus on what you have to offer a child as far as a lifestyle and day-to-day life is concerned, and not so much on the appearances of things.
If you were to set up a profile for yourself again, mm-hmm. and put it on the internet, what are some things that you would want that birth mom to know about you and your husband and your daughter?
I always say that we're creating a story. We're creating a little vignette so that a couple would get to know us. They're like kind of like having an opportunity through this forum to step into our lives and see what that would be like. So, for example, I love to cook, and I love music, and I love to dance, and my husband and I our neighbors probably think we're crazy if they look in our window, because the two of us are, you know, often to be found dancing around the living room. I love books and going to the library, and I love working with children. My husband works in aerospace, and he gets very excited about sharing his passion with others, and especially children and science.
He can get a little excited about talking about his work with other people, especially kids, which I can just imagine, because my husband is a computer programmer. And when he gets talking about work, if you're not into it, it's kind of like, whoa, you know, so I can just imagine a little kid being, you know, held for so long. And then it's like, okay, you know.
Yes, he gets very, very excited. You know, looking back, I think that's another reason that I do what I do for a living, is because I found us, you know, losing sight of ourselves when we were creating our own profile, because we were thinking too much about trying to figure out who our audience was and trying to massage who we were. And in the end, reason we were chosen by Ariel's birth mother was this kind of spiritual connection and that she resonated with. So the right match will happen with the adoptive parents and the birth mother if, you know, potential adoptive parents just stay true to themselves and be vulnerable enough to give a little glimpse into themselves. And not everything has to be perfect. You know, you might mention some little flaw that you have or something you wish you did better. It makes you seem more human.
Well, you should be more human. I would think that if I were to give up a baby for adoption, I would most likely want my baby to be in a safe house where... Mm-hmm. Even if there are arguments or, you know, fits of whatever between people when they get angry, I would want to know that my baby is safe, like they're not going to be neglected or they're not going to be abused. Everybody goes through some mental torment, I know, through their parents as they grow. So I would expect a little bit of that, especially through the teenage years. But as far as, you know, just the care and well-being of my child, if I was giving mine up for adoption, I would mostly just want to know that her safety was assured.
Absolutely. And again, I think that it's, you know, it's been great fun for me to help couples put together these profiles and for me to be given the opportunity as their coach to be able to get more of a look into their day-to-day lives and to help them weave a story about what would life be if I was a birth mother and I was to select this couple to place my child with. you know, what would the child's life be like?
Mm-hmm. Because as much as you're dreaming of having a child come into your home, this mom with a baby growing inside of her is dreaming of what her baby's life will be like if she does this grand gesture of giving it away.
Right.
And so she has hopes and dreams, and you have hopes and dreams, and it's kind of nice if they merge, but they don't have to exactly match. Is that right?
That's correct. I think that, you know, as I said, each birth mother has certain things that she's going to find most important, and there's some of that. There's some screening done on that at the level of the agency, you know, as far as what the birth mother is looking for. So beyond that, beyond the basics, it's just going to be a very human connection, and the more human that people can be during that process, I think the better off that both parties will be in the end.
By being human, do you mean by being loving?
Yes, and gracious and respectful.
Okay.
And honest.
And vulnerable sometimes,
too. And vulnerable,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both parties are absolutely vulnerable in that process because the adoptive parents are, you know, putting all their hopes and dreams into the fact that they're going to be selected to parent a child a pregnant woman is carrying, and the pregnant woman is putting her child's future, you know, in the care of whomever she selects to parent that child.
There's
a great deal of vulnerability and trust involved in this process.
And responsibility on your part.
Absolutely.
With that responsibility in your heart and in your head, do you find that you are challenged to make sure that you give this child the absolute best life you can as an adoptive parent?
You know, I thought about that recently, and I knew that I was going to be a great mom because I wanted it so much. And I do feel like I am, I feel this extra responsibility because this beautiful woman did this most loving and selfless act she could so that I could be a mom. So I do find that I really appreciate my daughter even more for the sacrifice of her birth mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like I really strive to, you know, give our daughter the best life that we can because of that.
Many of us have that need to be responsible for our children. But I can only imagine that when you know that someone else has given you this child to take care of in this way, maybe the job's a little bigger for you. I don't know.
I think the fact that we have an open adoption and that we, meaning that we had contact with the birth mother during her pregnancy and we still maintain differing degrees of contact with the birth mother and her extended family, I think that because we got to know her so well and knew the huge sacrifice that she was making, I took that on as an added layer of responsibility. I think that's a very personal and individual thing. I think just the fact that my journey was so long and so bumpy that I really try to give my all to motherhood.
Honestly, the way it sounds from the very beginning, you would have given your all to motherhood anyway.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Do you not sense that of yourself?
I do, and I think that, you know, the universe has tested me a number of times. I mean, going through a marriage that failed because of the issue, I had to do some soul searching, you know, in my late 20s, whether to continue in a marriage without children or to move on. And I had to really decide, you know, how much weight did that carry for me? And I just knew that part of the reason that I was born and brought to this planet was to be a mom. So it's definitely something that's been very important to me for a very long time.
And thankfully, you have had the opportunity to become a mom. Tell us about Ariel.
Oh, yes. Ariel is 6 and a half now, and it's amazing. I can't imagine being the mom to anyone besides Ariel Faith. It's such an amazing process to see the nurture and nature aspect of being an adoptive mom. Her birth mother was actually quite a bit like me personality-wise. We actually resemble one another. And it's been fun watching Ariel grow up and become her own little person at 6 and a half. She is a bright and loving child, curious, and I'm just very blessed to be her mom every day.
Do you see traits of your husband and yourself growing in her as well?
I see traits of her birth mother. Her birth mother has a beautiful singing voice, and so does Ariel. And then I see traits of us, because my husband and I are both bookaholics. We walk into bookstores, you know, and we're just immediately, our eyes become wide open, and we're just like, ah, fresh books. And our daughter has been enjoying reading from an early age, and she's the same way as us. We seem to have a lot of the same interests and passions, and some of them have been on Ariel's part since early on, so it's something that I don't think we've imprinted on her. It's just part of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But she loves cooking. She just made pretend eggs this morning. She loves to help with making dinner. She's also very much like I was as a child. She's a tomboy. She's very much a girly girl. She likes to play dress up and do makeup and hair. And then the next beat, she could be out in the backyard looking for lizards and frogs. And she definitely is interested in astronomy and aerospace. And so she went with my husband a week ago to do a little model rocket launch. And they go to astronomy together sometimes as well.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So being in your what you call midlife, is it tough keeping up with her?
Sometimes I think about it more than she would ever think about it. And my friends tell me that though I'm 51, I do more things in a day than some of my 35-year-old counterparts. So energetically, I feel like I wish I had more energy, but I'm not sure that rest of the world would be ready for that some days.
Right.
I'm already keeping up with her on most days. I mean, there's some things that I can't do, but it's not necessarily due to age.
I would like people to be able to get in touch with you if they're considering adoption, whether in their midlife or not. Would that be okay?
Absolutely. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Can you give us some contact information?
Sure. I have a website, www.parentingbyadoption.com. And all my contact information is on there, and more information about me and my blog.
Is there anything else you'd like people to know before I let you go?
Just that I just want you to know that if you're at the fork in the road and you've exhausted all your fertility treatments, that 6.5 years later, I very much am blessed to be a mom by adoption. It was a different path that I was brought on, but I'm very, very happy and very, very, very blessed to be a mom by adoption.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you, Wendy.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm Steve Dismukes. I write and draw a weekly updating webcomic called Dark Places at darkplacescomic.com. I'm also a freelance illustrator, and Wendy's very good at spotting what other people can do and what they can be and helping them to find that themselves and to bring it out and show it to the world. Wendy's podcast is a great way for her to bring this skill of hers. I think the next voiceover star is a very good example of allowing people who wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to get their voices heard. It's a really good way to showcase people who do have remarkable talent, might not necessarily be appreciated or recognised in their day-to-day lives. One thing that people should know about Wendy is that she really does care. She's really interested in finding out about people and helping them to flourish. She's very good at finding the good in people and interested in people, which is a really big, really valuable trait. So now I've been doing my webcomic Dark Places for 2 and a bit years now, and it's going very well. She keeps on with encouragement, keeps on pushing me to step beyond my comfort zones and to fulfill my potential. Others can benefit from listening to Wendy because she's very passionate about helping people follow their dreams. She's happiest when she's helping other people to shine.
You're listening to Wendy Edwards on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Right now, I'm speaking with Allison Capps. She is a great mom from Louisa County who has decided to adopt internationally. Now, Allison, you had already had a daughter with your husband when you decided to go for it and adopt from China.
Yes, that's correct. We actually, we decided to go to China about a year ago, but we had planned to adopt before our biological daughter was born. We kind of always knew that would be part of the plan, or at least we had that burden on our heart for probably about 13 years before we began the process.
So this is a discussion you and your husband had well before you had a child of your own?
Yes, that's right. Before we ever tried to have any children, he shared with me that he had always thought about going overseas to help a child who didn't have a chance at a good life, that maybe was in an orphanage or didn't have a home, and to bring them home and make them part of our family and to help them have a better life.
And you have gone through such a process in being able to adopt Zoe, who now lives with you. I know that you and your husband and your daughter Kayla went to China to pick up Zoe and bring her home. Can you tell me, now that you've been to China and you've seen the condition that the children are living in and you understand the environment a little better, can you tell me whether those initial feelings that you and John had all those years ago were the same?
We were just so glad to be there that we knew even more when once we were there and saw the conditions and saw the orphanage where she was, that if we hadn't have come or if no other family would have stepped forward, that she wouldn't have had a very bright future. In China, when they turn 14, the children in the orphanage, they age out and they are then just released to the streets. And so they have to fend for themselves, whether that be, you know, they can try to find a job, but from what I hear, that's very difficult. And a lot of them are left to begging or prostitution. And I always thought that the children probably were trained in some skills and maybe work in factories, but I found out just from speaking to some of my friends who are from China that that doesn't really happen. And so we were just so glad that we were able to bring her home and that that didn't happen to her, because at age 10 and a half, she didn't have much time. And there's so many that are, I get emails from different organizations, one of them being rainbowkids.com, another one is bringinghopetochildren.com, and you see the faces of these children that are quickly approaching age 14, and your heart just goes out to them, and you just pray that someone will see them and see something in them and maybe feel moved to give these kids a chance.
What did you see in Zoe before you met her?
Hard one to answer, but we knew immediately that she was ours, and it was like unanimous. My husband and even my daughter said, "That's her. That's the one." And there were, you know, quite a few that we were like, no, that's just not our child. And my daughter would say, that's not my sister. I don't know whether there was, you know, whether it was God telling us that was her or just like an instinct or a gut feeling, but I really didn't think we were going to bring home a child that was 10. I thought that she would be 7 or 8. But when we read her report and saw, it was only one picture that we saw, we were like, that is definitely her. And we, you know, locked in on her file and were committed. We were committed to getting her.
And you had to adjust a little bit because of her age. You, like you said, you considered, you thought that when she came home, she'd be 6 or 7, but it turns out she was 10 and a half.
Physically, she's 10 and a half, and emotionally, there are some delays, and in some ways, she's even emotionally as young as 5 or 6, and in other ways, she is older, like 14 or 15, because she had to survive on the streets in China, so she became very streetwise, but as far as socially, she didn't have many opportunities, like learning how to fit into a family or learning
how children behave in a school because she'd never been to school.
Was Zoe found on the streets, and that why she is that why she was in an adoption agency?
Yes, she was found under a bridge, and I don't really have any other details about that.
At what age?
9. So she was only in the orphanage for 14 months before we went and got her.
And they have no information about her birth parents?
There was nothing in her file, and our guide in China, our translator, asked her about her past. And we've heard a few different stories, so we're not really sure what the truth is. And even just today, we ran into two girls at the mall who are in college who are Chinese and speak, you know, fluent Mandarin and English. And they took an interest in Zoe. She seems to grab the hearts of everybody who comes in contact with her. They talked to her a little bit, and they told me that she said her dad died of cancer. We had gathered that he died when she was little, but we didn't know that it was cancer. Because I don't speak or understand English that well. I mean, Mandarin.
Right.
So I understand a little bit, and I've had to learn just to try to communicate with her since we've had her over the last 4 months. When we've, you know, had our frustrations with the language barrier, time may seem at the time to pass slowly, but it really has flown by, and she's making such progress. We're really amazed at how well she's doing learning English and how willing she is to socialize with people, because we've heard that not all of the children talk that much, but she likes to talk.
Is she going to public school?
She is a school that has a really good English program because they have a high refugee population. I think it's 20 or 25%, so they are set up with English second language teachers that work there 5 days a week and some tutors, too, that help out.
In 4 months, can you give us an example of how much she has learned as far as learning English?
Mm-hmm. Wow, how do I do that?
Well, when she came to America, what words could she use and what can she use now?
When we picked her up, she didn't speak any English at all. The first thing she learned to say was, "I love you," and aww. Yes. And when we went to her orphanage for the tour, she was so proud that she was learning English, so she would go around to all of her friends and say, "Yes!" Just every few minutes we'd hear her say, "Yes!" And she really thought that was great. And now she is mixing Chinese and English together. You know, the Chinese words are fewer and fewer, and the English are more and more. So she surprises me almost daily with something new. Like, I was at the store the other day looking at some things, and she went, "How about this?" And I said, "Did she just say, how about this?" And one day she said, "Oh, my gosh, so cool." I just never know what she's going to say next. And she keeps us all, you know, amazed. And another thing about her in school that we, like, she couldn't count. She could count to 5, I think. And now she's counting to 100. She struggles a little bit with it. She needs a little bit of help, but she's doing pretty good with that. Counts to 20 on her own. And the thing that amazes me is that within the first month, she was doing fractions. And I don't understand how a child who didn't know the numbers and couldn't add and subtract could do that. But I watched her do it myself. She brought the papers home. The other kids in the class, of course, that's where they were, was with fractions. And so now they got more and more advanced and went into decimals, which was a little bit over her head. So we went back to the basics, and we're doing adding and subtracting. And she's doing very well with it.
How are she and Kayla getting along? I'm sure they have some really fun times, but are they getting acclimated? Are they becoming, quote, sisters?
It's been really great to see, like, the transformation with them, because Kayla just couldn't wait to get a sister. She prayed for a sister, like, daily and every night, and she just asked all the time. And when we picked Zoe up in China, she was so excited. And the first few days, she was excited. And then the insecurity crept in. And then the jealousy crept in. And then the bickering between them. It started pretty quickly. And then Zoe, who is so childlike, adores her big sister. And I think that's pretty typical, because me being the youngest, I remember adoring my brothers and sisters. They go back and forth from playing and loving each other and helping each other to bickering, and all of my friends are telling me that's completely normal.
I would say so too. That's absolutely normal, and you can pretty much know that they are accepting each other as family if they're able to be as angry as they can be with each other, as much as they can be loving.
Yeah, and I've seen some really almost magical moments with those two. Like the other night, I had to go to worship practice at my church, and while I was playing with my band, Kayla helped Zoe with her homework. And it was just so sweet to see her helping her sister do that. And she likes to help teach her things. There's more good times between them than there was in the beginning.
Real quickly, I'd like to ask two questions. First, is the adoption process what you thought it would be?
I think so. I think it is. It's more rewarding than I thought it would be. It's more work than I thought it would be, from going from one child to two also. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I think that's pretty typical with people when they're getting ready to have their second child. People keep telling me how lucky Zoe is, or it's so great that we found her, you know, and maybe that's true and she will have a better life, but we're seeing how blessed we are to have her too, and how much our family has changed. There's some things that I see that I never anticipated, like having her makes us all love each other more, because she makes us love each other. She makes us all tell each other we love each other. Things we didn't necessarily say those things over and over before, but she insists that we do. And she also insists that we all say thank you and please, and if we and if we miss one, she's going to point it out. And so we've had to learn to be more polite to each other and to other people, too.
What would you say to anyone thinking of international adoption?
I would start the process again right now if I thought my husband was on board or that my daughter could handle it right now. But I think we do need some more time to adjust. I would say go for it. I think that there's so many children out there. There's 143 million orphans. There's other ways you can help, too.
How can people help otherwise?
Some people like to donate to, like, organizations that do things like buy an air conditioning unit for a orphanage, or put in a well, or put running water in one. One way they can help is there's an organization, I think it's called Shanoa's Hope, but okay. Stephen Curtis Chapman started an agency or an organization where they give grants to people who want to adopt, because that it is so difficult to come up with that lump sum for the adoption within 1 year, that some places provide grants to help people out. And so I'm sure that they have on their website a lot of ways that you can help. I know that BringingHopeToChildren.org has ways to help, too.
Okay.
For anyone that just is looking to adopt, there's RainbowKids.com, and I think adoption.com. There's a whole bunch of information about how to adopt in all the countries and all the programs you can adopt from. And then if you're looking for the legality of it, the State Department, I think it's www.state.adoption.org or something like that.
Okay.
They have a lot of the rules.
A couple of things you would say are most important in contemplating becoming an international adoptive parent.
Well, you have to think about the dynamics of your family, I guess, and how much you can handle. I don't think it's for everyone, so I wouldn't try to push it on everyone. Just like I have a friend who's a missionary, and she used to talk about going to islands where there were tribes who couldn't speak English and live with them. And I said I could never do that. And she said to me that she could never adopt. And I just couldn't understand that. But I you know, it took me some time to dwell on that. And I do understand that it's not for everyone. But I guess you want to think about the dynamics of your family and whether you're feeling led to, is this something that, what are the reasons that you want to do it? I guess there can be more than one reason to do it. Some people do it because of infertility. Maybe they have trouble having biological children, or some do it just because they, maybe they can have biological children, but they just want to help out. Mine was kind of a mixture of both. I could have biological children, but then we wanted to help out too. And I guess just pray about it. Maybe think about your support system. You want to have a good support system of friends and family, if possible, that will be behind you. Sometimes it won't be your family behind you. Sometimes it'll be friends.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you make friends. I've made so many friends along the way. I probably have 10 new pretty good friends that I met in the adoption world while going through this process. And we, you know, those are people that I can call up or email and say, hey, this is what we're going through. Are you going through the same thing? Or
right.
have you gone through it in the past? What did you do? What did you do in this situation?
And I'm sure it helps that you're there and that you understand the process for people who are new to it or people who have been through it who just want to kind of bounce conversation back and forth with you. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you. Sorry.
Oh, another thing I would say that when you start, review the agencies. You can find reviews online. I think it's agency reviews or adoptionagencyreviews.com and adoptionagencyratings.com, and you can see what other people have experienced at different agencies.
That's a valuable resource.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing it.
You're welcome.
And thank you for paying it forward in your life by helping another. And it sounds like she's helping you right back.
Oh, yes, she is. Our lives are much better having her here. I can't think of life without her now. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And I really appreciate this opportunity to share our experience, and I hope that maybe it plants a seed somewhere that someone would hear this and felt led to either adopt or maybe help out in some other way.
Thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you, Wendy.
And congratulations on your new baby girl.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's going to wrap it up for this week on The Wendy Edwards Show. Come back on Tuesday for more inspiration. Willie D on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Step outside. with the grin on your face. Near the garden, a sacred place. Smoke arises into your eyes. Shades of blue running by. Faces in the sky. Sidewalk, a statue stands. He looks sad with his broken hands. The empty village, never a sound. Hear the wind blow through the town. Faces in the sky.